Good morning and welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. I'm Jeff Snyder and this is BRN AM for Monday, November 16th, 2020. And our top story today, we'll take a closer look at what's being called Secure 2.0. And joining me now to discuss this and more is Kevin Walsh. He's a principal with Groom Law Group, an employee benefits law firm based in Washington, D.C. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Jeff, it's always good being on the show. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's always great talking with you and your colleague, David Levine, every week on our podcast. Really want to dive in here on Secure 2.0. Many of our readers, listeners, our audience are aware the Secure Act passed last December, but a lot has happened with the CARES Act. What can you tell us about Secure 2.0?
So basically what's going on is that there have been more talks on the House side about modernizing the retirement system. Representatives Neal and Representatives Brady seem to have reached, you know, a bipartisan consensus, at least on the committee side in the House, on the next round of, you know, modernization measures. You know, when we talked about Secure, we were saying, you know, there's really a handful of themes, which is kind of a way of saying that it's a bit of potpourri. It's a bit of a Christmas tree where, you know, the provisions, they modernize, but they don't necessarily all fit together and kind of they can't be neatly classified into buckets. And Secure 2.0 is a lot like that, where, you know, there's a whole lot of modernization going on, but it's very difficult to cover it all thematically. So, I mean, examples of this are, you know, one of the things the bill does is it would expand automatic enrollment in retirement plans, you know, by, you know, having plans enroll employees automatically in a company's 401k plan when the new plan's created. And then, you know, that's one side of the house. Then other side, it does things like it modifies the credit for small employer pension plan startups. It would increase the required minimum distribution age to 75. You know, it would make it easier to do error corrections for employers. And then, you know, on the other side, it would shift so that, you know, at least one of your annual notices has to be delivered in paper, despite the fact that we just went through a big effort to switch to electronic disclosure. So it also allows higher catch-up contributions. So, if I was trying to come up with themes, and it's a stretch to come up with themes, it would be that, you know, it's going to mandate more coverage, and it's going to allow older Americans to catch up more or to leave their money in the plan longer.
Kevin, I would say that you mentioned it's bipartisan. This is a really good sign. Even given everything that's going on with the pandemic, the stimulus, the CARES Act, Secure, that we have bipartisan support for retirement and promoting retirement savings. Is that a key takeaway for you?
So, I mean, a key takeaway for me is that, you know, this is a House bill. We haven't seen a Senate companion introduced. So there's bipartisanship here, but it's you know, we're still in early stages. If you remember last time when we had Secure 1.0, it was RESA before it was Secure 1.0. You know, given the breakdown of the House and Senate, and I'm sure we'll talk more about, you know, the election results in the next segment. But if the parties are looking for areas where they can, you know, claim wins and show, you know, more bipartisanship than the rancor we've seen in the past 12 years, this is an area where we could see both sides work together and get a win. On the other hand, just because things are bipartisan doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get floor time.
Right. And that's, I want to talk to you about that in our next segment. But one of the things that I think has to happen here, Kevin, is what's called scoring. And that means that you have to, I believe, and I'll let you define it in more clearer terms, but I believe that's when you kind of associate cost, the cost of changing things on a bill, right? I mean, that's something that has not happened. That presumably would be a possible next step in the process.
Yeah, so at some point the bill will get scored. You know, when I read through it, it's pretty clear that it's going to not be revenue neutral. That is, that it's going to, you know, it's going to increase the deficit or increase debts on its own. So in you know, days of yore, which really are just pre-pandemic Washington, there was a sense that in order to pass legislation, it generally had to be budget neutral. Now, Republicans didn't do budget neutral for, or they've gimmicked budget neutral on some things, Democrats and others. a lot of this pandemic legislation, you know, the CARES Act, it was not budget neutral. So one thing to see with this is, does the next Congress go back to wanting to use pay-fors in order to pass legislation? Or does kind of a new theory of, you know, modern monetary theory allow for Congress to view an increasing national debt, even in issues like long-term retirement legislation, as a non-issue? And that, I mean, that remains to be seen, and it's a larger issue outside the retirement space.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously a policy and procedural issue in the House and ultimately the Senate as well. And for the White House, everyone's got to kind of weigh in there. Kevin, just, you know, your firm, you and David and your firm work with plan sponsors. Those are employers sponsoring retirement plans. You work with providers who provide services. What's the general feeling of those that you have talked to over the last several weeks since the bill has been put forth?
I think people are interested in it, but I mean, to be honest, there's so much going on in Washington right now that it's even people who, you know, they're really interested in things like, you know, the change in the amount that that, you know, older savers can put in to catch up, or they're really excited about the idea that they can provide matching contributions for participants paying down student loans. You know, there's so much going on the regulatory front, so much going on the just what's going on with the election still front, and then, you know, transition planning that Secure Act, because it's unlikely to be something that gets done in the lame duck session, is on the back burner, although it's being watched pretty closely.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, I want to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk to Kevin more about Secure and what are the potential next steps. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings in retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here, and if you're on Medicare, this is important. You're now entitled to eliminate copays and get dental care, dentures, eyeglasses, prescription coverage, in-home aids, unlimited transportation, and home-delivered meals, all at no additional cost. Plus, your zip code may have coverage with the Give Back benefit that adds money back to your Social Security check every month. Look, with the uncertainty of the virus and vaccines, you need to get everything you're entitled to. Here's the bottom line. Call to get significant benefits at no additional cost and see if your zip code has coverage with the Give Back benefit. Millions of people have trusted the Medicare Coverage Helpline. You can too. Call now. It's free.
Call 1-800-924-3920. That's 1-800-924-3920.
Welcome back. We're talking to Kevin Walsh of Groom Law Group. Kevin, Thanks so much for staying with us this morning.
Oh, it's always good being on. So a second segment, you know, just doubling up in the day.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you as always. And this is so informative for the viewers. So let's talk about next steps. We potentially have a transition to a new administration. Obviously, the votes haven't been, as of the time that we're talking about this, votes haven't been certified, but the election has been called. But let's talk about next steps, because we still have stimulus that I would think would be on the table. We have the original Secure Act, and as you said leading into the break, a multitude of regulatory changes that, by the way, could be changed as a result, priorities could be changed as a result of a brand new administration. So let's get your thoughts on that.
Well, that's a pretty big question. So I think we're going to have to unpack it in a couple different questions. If we're talking about Secure 2.0, I think next steps for Secure 2.0 are to get a feel for what House leadership thinks of it. So I don't think Speaker Pelosi has said anything yet about Secure 2.0. It's good that we have, you know, bipartisan agreement on the committee. Typically, things can move quickly through the House. And if it's bipartisan, then, you know, even in light of the narrowing of the Democrats' majority in the House, this is the type of legislation that you could see kind of passing through the House. They'll need to have a score before they do that. As we talked about, who knows if they're going to want to have offsets or not. On the Senate side, you're going to have, it looks like, you know, we've got runoffs in Georgia. And what happens in the Senate, or how the Senate operates, and even a lot of the cabinet positions are going to hinge a lot on the outcome in Georgia. If, you know, as is expected right now, or as is lean expected at the moment, Republicans maintain their Senate majority, then, you know, we could see a whole lot more floor time. So the Senate, the House tends to move things quickly. They tend to be able to get through things procedurally quickly. In the Senate, you tend to need to have consensus, or in the absence of consensus, either things don't move, or they require a fair amount of floor time. And floor time is calendar days, which gets you closer to the midterm. It gets you closer to the next Congress, and typically majority leaders don't like using floor time on things they aren't wild about. So if the Republicans have the majority, you could see that there could be a focus maybe on bipartisan legislation like this, perhaps because they might be less inclined to spend floor time on nominees, judicial confirmations, and, you know, non-legislative things like they've spent some floor time on in recent years. On the other hand, the retirement is only kind of one piece of the legislative puzzle, and pandemic relief seems to be issue number one for both parties. If Democrats take the Senate, I think we could expect that they would be spending more floor time, at least, you know, in the first half of the year, on confirmations. So getting Biden's cabinet confirmed, getting key positions filled, and then, you know, at that point, turning to things like pandemic relief, and then, you know, other top Democratic priorities, which I think infrastructure, possibly Green New Deal. And then it's interesting to see, you know, does President Biden push bipartisan legislation like something like Secure 2.0, or does he feel compelled to move things that are kind of more supported by some of the more progressive members of his caucus, in light of the record turnout for the election?
Kevin, we've talked previously both on the podcast and with you and David both on the program about ESG and the ESG regulations. Now, there were final rules put forth that I guess become effective in some period of time with a new president and theoretically a new administration, new Secretary of Labor, all these different cabinet posts. Is there a chance that gets altered or rolled back? And would other legislation potentially get altered or rolled back?
So we're in an interesting spot right now where the Republican Labor Department, they finished the financial factors rule, which in its earlier iteration focused a lot on ESG. In its final form, it focused more on, you know, is something a financial factor or not? But they're also working on things like an investment advice exemption. proxy voting rules, and a number of other rules. And when we talked earlier this year, we were saying, you know, anything finished this late in the year would be subject to the Congressional Review Act. Well, if the Democrats don't have the Senate, then they essentially can't use the Congressional Review Act. So that's off the table. And then the real question becomes, is a rule final and effective before January 20th, 2021? If a rule's final and effective by January 20th, 2021, then undoing that rule would require a whole new a whole new regulatory process. So a new proposed rule, a new comment period, and then a new final rule. So changing it could be time consuming. If it's not final and effective, then we typically see those rules pulled back and possibly see the new administration use the comments to revise the final rule in their direction. You asked specifically about the financial factors rule. That rule is going to be final and effective. So it's going to be on the books. It's going to be in effect. What we could see is we could see the Biden administration do something like a non-enforcement policy where they say that, you know, they're not going to enforce that rule. That does leave the possibility that private litigants would enforce the rule as written. And then ultimately, I wouldn't be totally surprised if they revisit it through another rulemaking effort. That being said, I think we like to think that retirement policy is front and center. EBSA also handles a whole lot with respect to health. And from what we're hearing, priority from day one is going to be COVID relief. So it's unlikely that, you know, day one resources are going to be spent on rewriting the financial factors rule when there's other issues that seem to be a higher priority, like, you know, is there a cost sharing for COVID testing? Is there a cost sharing for different COVID treatments? And what do health plans have to cover?
Kevin, I'd be remiss if in the last minute I didn't ask you about one of your favorite topics, and I think it's important. Missing participants. We've got about 60 seconds left. What's left? What's the latest update there? I know this is something you're extremely passionate about.
I'm passionate about it. I'm hoping that we get some guidance out of the Trump administration before it leaves. Missing participants has been a successful regulatory, successful enforcement effort, with EBSA recovering almost $1.5 billion in their fiscal year 2019. Sadly, they've recovered $1.5 billion without issuing guidance, which is really frustrating the plan sponsor community. If the Trump administration doesn't issue missing participant guidance kind of in its closing days, it's really low-hanging fruit for the Biden administration as a way to signal that they're not anti-plan sponsor, they're not anti, you know, service provider, and they're looking for practical solutions. I think if either side issues guidance, it would be a huge help for the retirement system on the whole.
Well, certainly a lot going on and a lot to be watching when January comes around. Kevin, we're going to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us on the program. And of course, we look forward to having you back on very soon. And I love talking with you and David. We'll talk to you all very soon on the podcast. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, Jeff. It's always good being on. Bye, everybody.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest or somebody you think we should talk to? Drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the news in retirement, markets, technology, personal finance, so much more all in one place, check out our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. So until tomorrow, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.
Are you being audited and do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Is the IRS threatening to take more of your money? Don't fight the IRS alone. The Tax Doctor is here to help you negotiate your tax bill and reduce your stress. The IRS can freeze your assets and seize your bank accounts, but you can stop these IRS actions. The Tax Doctor will work with you using our years of experience to represent your case to help you get the best resolution under the IRS guidelines. Help is here to deal with the IRS to reduce your stress. We've handled thousands of cases, so we know what we're doing. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, do not call the IRS alone. Call a tax doctor now for a tax emergency analysis.
Call 800-224-6439.